Peace be with you. Friends, the single most important shift or conversion that we are called to make is this one. Moving from self-centeredness to God-centeredness. Now, I know that's easy to say, perhaps even easy to think, but the accomplishment of it is the work of a lifetime. It's what the spiritual life is really all about. The most fundamental truth taught by the Bible, you could say, is that we are creatures of God. And that means that we don't exist through ourselves or for ourselves. We exist because of God's grace. Now, look at this philosophically, if you want, metaphysically, that you know, we don't exist through the power of our own essence. We come from a higher power. See, but that means we come as a result of grace. We don't have to exist. We exist, therefore, as a gift of a higher power. And then furthermore, we don't exist for ourselves, because the end or purpose of our lives is to serve God. Now, as I've said 1,000 times, the true God is not a tyrant. God is love. Therefore, the surrender to Him, living for His purposes, is tantamount to fullness of life for us. So again, that's a paradox that we all have to get, all of us biblical people. You say, well, I don't want to surrender to anybody. I want to live my own life. Yeah. But that's immature, because surrendering to God, living for God's purposes, is the best thing for you. We don't come from ourselves, we come from God. We don't exist for ourselves, we exist for God. Now, the basic and original sin is getting this precisely backwards. The original sin is making the self central. It's denying our creatureliness and attempting to turn ourselves into God. Now, watch it up and down the Bible. You know, I've often commented on the David stories. When David goes bad, he stops listening to God and starts acting like God. That's true of all the villains and fallen figures in the Bible. Think of King Saul. Think of Pharaoh. I mean, up and down the Bible. You stop listening to God, you start acting like God. Now, what this produces in turn is the splintering and dividing of the self. The falling apart of the self. The Bible teaches over and over again that deep unhappiness follows from this fundamental metaphysical and spiritual error. When you say, I exist from myself and for myself, you will fall apart in short order. You will splinter and disintegrate. Okay? Now, we're continuing with sort of Bible 101 here, but it's very important to keep revisiting these fundamental principles. God effected, the Bible tells us, a rescue operation in order to free humanity from this self-imposed plight. The operation took the form of a people. Israel, founded by Abraham, was meant to be a people who listened to God, who obeyed the Lord, obedire. This means to listen, rather than their own ambitions and purposes. The great patriarchs and prophets of Israel, at their best anyway, listened to God and abided by His commands. Whenever Israel went bad, and it did a lot, it listened to itself. Okay, as I say, Bible 101, all of this. These are the fundamental principles of the spiritual order. But all of it, I think, is important as background for the extraordinary readings we have for today. Reading 1 is taken from the first book of Kings and introduces us to Elijah and Elisha, two great prophets of Israel, two friends of and spokespersons for God. All we know about Elijah's career, and I put that in quotes, is that it was utterly determined by God. Go to Ahab and challenge him, and Elijah does. Go to the widow of Zarephath, and he does. Pick a successor, and he does. See, most of us are preoccupied with our careers. What should I study? What should my first job be? How long should I stay at it? How much money should I be making? What's my next career move? But see, all that, and when is, in its own context, those are okay questions. But see, the trouble is, much of that is just ego-driven. It's born of my self-direction. The real question is, what does God want me to do? What does God expect of me? What does God want me to accomplish? You see, again, this is the point of this reading. What happens to you when you make that fundamental conversion from a self-centeredness to a God-centeredness? What happens when you begin asking fundamentally different types of questions about your life? So, Elijah's been told to choose his successor, and he's obedient, so he does. He comes to Elisha. Now, what do we know about Elisha? It's so typical of the Bible. The Bible will not give you 200 pages of psychological exposition like a Henry James novel, you know. The Bible will tell its stories in very deft, laconic strokes. And this is a really good example, because we hear that Elisha is, quote, plowing with 12 yoke of oxen. Well, it's a biblical code that we're going to miss today, but it's their version of he was driving a Maserati and had millions in the bank. This is an agricultural culture. These are people close to the ground. Only very, very wealthy people could have afforded such an impressive piece of machinery and such a large herd of oxen. What's being told here is simply that Elisha was a very, very wealthy man, probably at the height of a very successful career. Now, here's the point, and why that setup is so important. Elijah, without asking Elisha, without engaging in the slightest dialogue, simply at the prompting of God, put his mantle on Elisha and chose him as his successor. Just like that. Who is this fellow, Elijah? I don't know, never met him. What's he doing? Well, he's choosing me as a successor. He's telling me what God wants me to do. Part of his career plan, Elisha's? Obviously not. Something he anticipated? Certainly not. Something that he wanted, corresponded to his desire? We have no indication of that. But Elisha is a good biblical man. And so what does he do? He simply and immediately acquiesces. How beautifully the Bible puts it. Elisha left the oxen and ran after Elijah. Now again, we say, well, leave some oxen behind. Who cares? You know, who wouldn't want to leave oxen behind? But read it as he left his Maserati. He left his fleet of Cadillacs. He left his finally appointed mansion. He left behind his beautiful clothes. He left behind everything. And ran after Elijah. Running is a great symbol in the Bible. It comes up a lot in different contexts. Think of Mary, you know, once she's heard the message from the angel, she went in haste to the hill country. It's a good sign. It means you know what you're doing, and you're doing it with great enthusiasm. You run, you run, run. You know where you're going. So Elisha left everything and ran after Elijah. And then we hear, it's a lovely touch, he slaughtered the animals. And that's giant thing. I mean, you're someone in the ancient world. That's the key to your wealth, your success, your power. He slaughters them, used the plow for fuel. And again, that plow was a rare commodity. They have a plow that would go behind 12 yoke of oxen. This is a big piece of machinery. Used the plow for fuel, so he could cook their flesh and give his people a great banquet. And then he followed Elijah. This is a story of someone completely divesting himself. This is a biblical person. He knows his life is from God and for God. And once that became clear to him, what God wanted, he ran. I wonder if you know the story of Ann Russell Miller. Ann Miller was a San Francisco socialite. She was fabulously wealthy. She was the mother of 10 children and 19 grandchildren. She was in possession of a glorious mansion overlooking San Francisco Bay. She was a denizen of the finest clubs, someone who vacationed on her yacht in the Mediterranean. She was a contemporary American version of Elisha. But Anne was also a very devout Catholic. And she and her husband made a vow that whoever died first, the surviving partner would dedicate his or her life to God. So, when Anne's husband died relatively young of cancer, Anne resolved to give her life to God in the most dramatic way. She threw one more huge party for her friends. I've talked to some people who were at that party. And then she gave everything away and joined the Cloistered Carmelite Sisters in Des Plaines, Illinois, which is outside Chicago. She now wears the simple brown habit of a Carmelite religious, lives a life of utter devotion in poverty, chastity, and obedience. She sleeps on wooden planks covered by a thin mattress, eats the simplest meatless dishes served in the convent refectory. She's no longer Ann Russell Miller. She is Sister Mary Joseph of the Trinity. The vows she has taken, she appreciates not as burdens, but as a means to freedom. For now, in the most radical sense, she is free to give her life utterly to God. It's exactly what Paul meant when he said, "It is for freedom that Christ has set us free." Her life is not about her, it's about God and what God wants to accomplish through her. Now, friends, I realize that her story, wonderful, like the Elisha story, is a very radical one. I also realize not everyone is called to this sort of total surrender. But listen now, and maybe this is the key point here. But everybody is indeed called to the spirit of the evangelical counsels. Poverty, chastity, obedience. For we must all become detached from wealth, power, honor, pleasure. Because at the end of the day, they don't matter. God matters. At the end of the day, our will doesn't matter. God's will matters. That's the great truth that these wonderful stories, both ancient and modern, are meant to impart to us. And God bless you.